Let me just recap a bit until Doug logs on. And
Morning.
hey there, Doug. Okay, good. Okay, so I just want to, let's just recap anyway. So we're referring to the last two verses. And we talked last week regarding, and you know, we're going to do the commentaries today. We didn't get to that last week. But just to refresh where we are, so he says in 12:13, King Solomon says, at the end of the matter. So the end of the matter means that after man has explored all different possibilities for happiness, and again, that's what the book was regarding, how does man attain his true happiness? How does he comply with the with his nature, with the world? So he says that after the end of the matter, at the end of the matter, all has been heard, and God should be feared, and his commands should be observed, because this is all of man. This is all of man. So what we said this means is that man had a assumption about how to live life to attain his happiness, and King Solomon did was explored for us all the different possibilities. He analyzed all the different pursuits, attitudes, and he says what happens is now that after we've explored everything, all has been heard. So we asked, how can he say all has been heard? Because he said the previous verse that you can't write down everything. You can't, there's no end to writing the books of ideas. So what does he mean that all has been heard? So he means to say that the all the categories, all the possibilities, the broad strokes in terms of where man will pursue his happiness, whether it's going to be through pleasures, through accomplishment, through ego, all main categories of human, the faculties that a human being can express were explored, as well as fame, as the objects of human pursuit, wealth, wine, and so on. Meaning to say that a person will have the assumption that there's an alternative way to happiness outside of the Torah system, as if they're made by two separate creators, and one is not complementary to the other, or one is not integral to the other. So King Solomon is telling us, no, that's not true. After all has been explored, and we've shown that everything is really, we've addressed everything, we've asked all the questions, we've got all the answers. So he says, God should be feared. I mean, there's no escape from the fact that God really created everything. And the Torah system is really has everything in it. That's what it says, and his mitzvahs, his commands, you should guard. Because that really addresses everything that the person was trying to pursue that is embodied in this book. And he says, this is really all of man. What do you mean this is all of man? Only through addressing the commands, which God in his infinite wisdom understands all the different the facets of human personality and nature, because he created it. He knows all the workings, all the machinations of man. So he says, now, if you follow the system of the commands, then you're addressing every element that man needs in terms of his need for happiness. If you're not following the system, so then you're not exhausting all the engagements that man needs to exhaust, to be engaged in order to satisfy himself, because that's man is designed for satisfaction in a certain way, and the system of Torah perfectly complies with man's design, because both are made by the same creator. So that's what he means in terms of the end of the matter. If you've done your exploration, after all main ideas have been discussed, we come full circle and we see that the system is really the right way. So you see that he's addressing here the person who wanted to maybe find an alternative way and not to have the quote-unquote burden of the Torah system. Okay? And we'll see what it says. What does he mean? And this is all of man. So he says, Horner says like this. This is what the intent is in existence of all of man's energies and powers. Not like you would think that he's simply a physical being alone. I mean, he needs to have the system of Torah that engages the mind and can spend hours on a few lines of Talmudic area. And that is something which it really engages a person's highest element, his intelligence, to the highest degree when he's involved in seeing the discussions of the rabbis, the debates, and what are they debating on, and what's the difference between whether you consider, you know, work on Sabbath to be a mere act, or does it have to have an accomplishment too? Is this a violation of the Sabbath? Is it violated only when you do, let's say I just carry out a poppy seed from a private domain to a public domain? A person is killed for that because he violated the Sabbath, as opposed to a person who's toiling, he's trying to build something, but if he doesn't achieve the right quantity, so there he's not going to be violating the Sabbath. So what's the reason why in one case a simple carrying of almost a microscopic element, the poppy seed, that's something which can a person could be killed for violating the Sabbath, whereas other things he could use great energy and not violate. So you have to sit down and analyze, and what are the various definitions of all the 39 forms of work? What is considered carrying? What's considered building? What's considered weaving? And the analysis and the debates engage the mind in a very high plane, and he starts to appreciate how the structures of thought are. Same thing that Aristotle was engaged in. Right, so it's not something which is commonly pursued, but he's telling you here that the mitzvos, and not just simply performing the mitzvah, but understanding what's the intent. Because this is all of man, not like you would think that it's just a physical being. Okay, one second. And Rashi says also, Rashi says on 13, verse 13 says, after all the whole matter has been heard, God should be feared. So what you can do, you should do, and your heart should be intended towards heaven. And a person has to realize that, like Rabbi Chait said, when a person serves God, he's really serving himself. He's willing the best thing for himself. God has no needs. There's no gain. Those are all physical phenomena. Those are all human characteristics. Achievement, gain. We can't apply that to God when he created man. We don't know. And to say this motive is also personal, you know, a human attitude. So we can't attribute motive to God and ask the question, why did God create man? That's implying motive. So we don't understand what God is. These type of discussions are futile. But the bottom line is, once man's created, we can analyze and see the great benefit that he has, and that the way he's designed is for his benefit, and then the system given to him is for his benefit. And Rashi goes on and he says, and God's commands you should keep, because this is all of man. What is Rashi saying? Because for this matter was man created. So he emphasizes this very point. Engagement in the system that God gave, this high level of system of wisdom of the Torah, and the perfections that are achieved by doing the actions. Rashi goes on and he says in the last verse, because all actions God will bring to judgment on everything hidden, whether it's good or if it's evil. So Rashi says that which man does, God will bring to judgment. And he says, on all matter that's hidden, even on something which is accidental. Even something which is accidental, meaning that why should, if a person does something accidentally, why is he brought to justice for it? Because an accident doesn't happen unless there's some involvement of the person. There's three categories of act that a human being can perform. Something which is purposeful, intentional. something which is accidental, and something which is coerced, meaning he had no control whatsoever. So either there's no control whatsoever, there's complete control, or there's some partial. So if a person is partially involved in something negative, he's brought to justice for it. A person can't kill somebody accidentally without any type of culpability. A person's in the woods and he's hunting. There's no way he can kill somebody by accident, because if he killed somebody, that means he didn't thoroughly search out the entire area of the range of his bow and arrow, or his shotgun, or whatever he's using. Had he searched out and there's nobody there, you can't kill somebody if he's not there. So that's why a person that kills by accident is still culpable. He has to go to the cities of refuge until the high priest dies. And again, there's beautiful ideas behind that as well. But you see, the Rashi is telling us that a person is brought to justice even for something he does by accident, which is negative. And he says further, whether a person does something good or he does something evil, he can be brought to justice. Why is he saying a person should be judged for something good? So listen to what he says. We said it last week, but let's emphasize it. Let's repeat it. Even if a person stumbles in the matter of a command, he's fulfilling God's commands, and he stumbles while doing the command. For example, he gives charity to a poor person publicly. So the intent of the person there is, now we see clearly, he's doing it for fame. He could have done it covertly. He could have done it anonymously, which is the highest level of charity. And even higher than that, he does it anonymously, and he does it through a messenger, and he says, don't tell me who the recipients are. So this way there's no satisfaction of who he benefited whatsoever. That's the highest level that the Shulchan Aruch, our book of the Code of Jewish Laws, tells us to do. And you see how careful the rabbis are in terms of outlining how fine a person can be judged. Okay, so that's Rashi. Let me just stop here and see if there's any questions. I want to do Sforno and Ibn Ezra too. Is everything clear? Yeah, he's telling you that everything is observed. A person is, he's telling you exactly how the system works.
But that does make it then a punishment of judgment-based.
Well, we know this. The Torah is clear that the system is a reward and punishment system. That's one of the 13 principles, actually, that Maimonides brings it down. That we have to be aware that a person can't hurt people and assume that there's no punishment awaiting him. That's unjust. A person is created with a way that if he follows his intelligence, he'll arrive at recognition that others are equal to him, and that he should have compassion. And if he violates that, so he's going against what he's really created, he has the potential to live properly. If he doesn't, he pays the price.
Giving charity, if you do it publicly, it sounded though that it was steered towards the negative, that you didn't think through it all the way of trying to give anonymously, so therefore it became more negative rather than a positive thing?
Well, I'm not weighing, I don't think King Solomon's weighing how much positive and negative was in that individual act. He's isolating the fact that if there's a negative in there, let's say it's 10% negative and it's 90% positive. So that 10% is still going to register. That's something which is still a conscious act that you did. That was something which you were completely in control of. Again, that's not going to negate the fact that you gave it. So it doesn't override necessarily, unless the negative was so bad that it completely obscures the positive. He's trying to show you, he's emphasizing that nothing is really hidden from God. So he's showing you, and again, a very good example, that even the nuances of human personality, where a person tries to fool himself, look, I'm charitable, I'm a great person, but what are you really doing? Are you really trying to benefit this person, this group of people, and so on? Or are you really trying to get more fame for yourself? Why end on that note?
Well, or have that note altogether, but especially to end on that note.
Right. Well, first of all, you know, we have to use our intelligence, and the rabbis addressed this already in terms of when you start training a child and what incentives you give them. And so, you know, we should understand that you work with a person. It's a saying, Charach Nar Al Pidaka, that you teach a child in as much as he's a child, but also as his individual personality works too. So this type of approach, of course, is not for a child. Let's just be clear. This is something once a person gains responsibility, intelligence, control over his emotions, and really has the capacity and the ability to be responsible for this. A child is not responsible, not even until he's 13, right? Let alone younger. So this, of course, is not being an approach that he's suggesting for children. What he first tells you, his primary message, that really the benefit of man, he goes through this whole book to tell you, let's explore the benefits. Let's see, just in terms of the action per se, what's the best thing for man in terms of attaining his happiness. I mean, he's not talking about a punishment and reward thing throughout the book until the very end. So I would throw it back at you and say, listen, he's got one verse that talks about it. The rest of the book, well, how is he approaching the philosophy? He's saying, explore it yourself. Let's look at all the different things. Is it a good for you? In and of itself, is the action worthwhile? Is this attitude that you have towards wealth an intelligent attitude? Will it play out successful or not? Let's just look at the facts. That's what he did with this entire message. So his primary message, 999% of what he's telling you is through exploration of the reality, the benefits of a certain happiness in life. Mourning over the fact that You're going to die just like a Russian is going to die. Is that a correct attitude, that you should be, you know, upset that both you and the wicked person have the same end? Or is that the false notion because you're assessing man's value just based on, you know, earthly parameters? You're not looking past that. So you see, the entire book is exploring all the attitudes, the emotions, the man's aspirations, his desires, his feelings, in and of itself. And he shows which are proper and which are not. But as he's interested in that people should live a good life, he does not want to leave out the fact that that could still be an incentive. The fact that if a person still needs to have that incentive of punishment, that should be there. But, you know, putting it in context, it's one verse compared to how many did we go through these past in a couple of years.
Rabbi?
Yes, Jim. Well, here he's talking about judgment. Verse 14 is saying, on all matters, God will bring a person to justice. On that which is hidden, whether it's good or whether it's bad. So here he's talking not about perfection, but about real justice. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, but that doesn't necessarily always entail punishment, right? I mean, if you do something 90% good, it doesn't mean that he won't draw attention to the
I guess we'd have to look at each individual case. What is the specifics? I can't really answer that on a general. And again, how God does the punishment after a person dies, and how he does the reward, how he performs it. So, you know, how does that work? Or is it really more of like Maimonides' approach, that this nature of the soul, as it is at that moment of death, continues on that level? And the loss would be if he didn't reach himself, you know, to bring himself to a higher level. So that would be the loss. Not that there's some sort of a positive event of punishment that is afflicting him. Although, Rabbi Chait once said that there's no reason why God can't give a person a sensation of pain even after he departs from the body. That's not something which is impossible. So, again, this is something which I've never really studied, and I think there's probably very little, if anything, that's other than more than just assumptions, because the rabbi said, no eye has seen this. What is this? The next world. Only God alone knows exactly what occurs there.
So how is it then that Rashi's postulating of how it actually is if he has no proof?
Well, he's saying that there will be responsibility. He's not saying what will happen, but he's saying that on something which a person is negligent, even in a matter of not performing a mitzvah properly, that's something which Rashi's saying is a person is held accountable for. He had the ability to do it a proper way. He didn't. Some emotion he let get to him. Now, how will it be meted out? I don't know.
Right, but what's his basis for even assuming that that's the case?
That's an understanding of the verse. When it says that for all matters, God will bring the person, all matters will be brought by God to justice on all things hidden. Whether it's good or bad. So, what do you mean that you're bringing a person to justice on something good or bad? You should only say you bring a person to justice on something bad. So Rashi is saying, oh, what does it mean that you could even be judged on something good? Meaning you did a command, which is a good thing, but how you did it was lacking. So that seems to be where Rashi is deriving this lesson from. That's his understanding. It's my understanding of Rashi too, so you know I could be erring on that, but this is how I think Rashi is intense.
That's what the Judaic Press Commentary suggests too, that that's how they're understanding the Rashi. Is there something in the language that makes them put it that way? I mean, judgment in the English doesn't have to be negative. In the Hebrew here, is that really suggesting a negative?
Well, I don't think anybody's brought to court because he did something good.
No, but when you talk about the ultimate court, for every night with my children, we go through a little chart and talk about their accomplishments and what things that they forgot to do or did not listen on, right? They have certain chores. They need to make their bed, they need to do their homework, and this sort of thing. So if they fill up the whole thing, that's still a judgment that they did everything right, and they dance around like they just won the World Series or something, right? I mean, they just think it's the greatest thing. If they miss one, they don't feel quite so good about it. If they miss five out of seven, you know, and we haven't even punished them, but they've still been judged on their performance of the day, and they don't feel too good about it. But that's still judgment. I mean, it's not.
I agree with that too. I think that's tenable too. But Rashi's words are, even if a person stumbles with a command. So where is he getting that from? So I'm suggesting he's getting it from the fact that the person's being judged on good and evil. But you shouldn't have the word good there. But I see your way too. I think they're both plausible. Right?
Sure, I was just wondering if there was something in the Hebrew that suggested only a negative connotation, and that's why he brought that.
Right. Okay. Okay. Now let's do Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says in 13, says the end of the matter. So we've already heard all Or it means that we've heard all the disputes of the rabbis. So he's giving his suggestion for what does it mean, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Either we've explored all the topics or we've heard the various discussions of the rabbis. Okay? He goes on and he says, Ze Ose. So this you should do. So he inserts some words into the verse to make it more readable. So he's saying, read the verse like this. After the end of the matter, all has been heard, and now insert the words, this you shall do. Then go on and read the verse, God you should fear. So, because this is all of man. So he says, we're returning to the matter that we already passed, that man in his life and in his death, this is really encompasses all of man. Again, Kizek Kol Ha'odam. So it says, Yoshev Le'inyan Sha'avar. We return back to the matter that we were discussing. And that is man in his life and in his death. So it's all things are futile. And this is the happenstance of man. Meaning if things are not... everything is futile if it's not pointing towards this objective. Or he says, this is the essence of every man. And he returns now to the fear of God, the awesome one and the honorable one. Okay. Then he goes on in 14, Ibn Ezra, and he says, for God you should fear. So Ibn Ezra says this as follows. The principle that you did not mention in the book of Genesis from the beginning until where God completed creation, all that was mentioned over there in terms of God's name was only the God of justice, Elohim. So he says this is the principle here in the book of Qoheles. And a matter means to refer to that on all matters that are hidden, everything that is apparent that you have done, so a person is brought to justice in accordance with the hidden. What does it mean? A person is judged in accordance with the hidden. So he says, what that means to say is in line with the intent of the heart, whether it was good or bad. Meaning when a matter is brought to judgment, when a person is judged after he passes away, so he is judged based on his intent, his underlying intention, as opposed to the act. So a person could be walking into temple and he hurts his foot, so he can't get there. So he's not judged as if he didn't go. He is judged as if he did go. His intent was there. That was the third category of things outside of man's control. And that's why he couldn't fulfill it. But if he got up and he started walking, so then that shows the perfection that he has, that he valued the action, that he wanted to do it. Now, if something external prevents him, that's not his fault. He does not lose the reward for that conviction that was followed through in action. If, however, he's sitting on the couch and he feels it's a good thing to go to temple to pray with a quorum, but then he doesn't get off the couch to do it, so there's no perfection there. Because a person is, the barometer of conviction is when a thought is followed through with action. Okay. All right. So I think that ends the commentaries. Any questions or comments? This pretty much wraps up a few years that we've spent on this. So first I should say it's a nice accomplishment. We should all feel good that we've endured this and really took it through from the very beginning to the end. But let's just see if there's any, questions or final comments on this.
Rabbi, the two versions that I have.
Yeah.
Two of them. Verse 13 is repeated again after verse 14.
Yeah, I noticed that, and we do read it that way. I was looking for a commentary. I didn't see anybody, a reason on it. There may be more I can explore why they do that. But that's actually done on the Sukkot holiday when this book is read. I'm not sure if it may have to do with, like you were saying, like you don't want to end it on a note of judgment. You want it to be more in terms of an attachment for the good. So verse 13 talks about doing it because that's the right thing. Fearing God, this is the best thing for you. This is all of man. That's the real reason we should go after it. Perhaps they ended on that and they repeat that verse for that very reason. But go ahead.
You know why it's read on Sukkot?
Well, Sukkot is this three holidays, like Rebbe Chait said years ago. He gave a discussion, it was like 25 years ago, and I happened to be fortunate to be there, and he said a nice idea that there are three main holidays, and that's Passover, and Shavuos, and Sukkot. And he defined it very succinctly as follows. Passover was the emancipation from the wrong ideas, the idolatrous culture of Egypt. We were saved from that idolatrous, mystical culture, the Egyptians. That was Passover, Exodus. Shavuos celebrates God's giving us the right ideas, God's absolute knowledge. So now what's the only thing else left to do? Is Sukkot, acting, living out that lifestyle, meaning depending more on God than on your physical. So you go into the frail huts for a week. And you wave the produce around to show that all vegetation, all food, all sustenance comes from God. So your shelter and your food, your two primary needs, you're showing really that it's God, and if you live properly, then he overrides the very laws of nature. Don't feel more dependent on nature. I did an article this week in the Jewish Times to take a look on earning God's providence. So I cited in there a number of sources that God's trying to show us that it's true, nature works a certain way, but a person who lives properly, God will work it out for that person that they'll have what they need to live properly and to live right in terms of the Torah. A person really wants to have the good, God will give it to him. So that's that holiday of Sukkot, when we're acting out there and we're living and we're embodying, that meaning we show that conviction. Again, we're not just sitting on the couch, but we get up and we live a certain life where we depend on God and we show that we're convinced of his promises. So that's where we're embodying the right philosophy. So therefore, the book of Koheles is a complete complement to that because it discusses the right philosophy. So that's why it's read, I believe, on Sukkot, because it's complementing the very underlying core idea of Sukkot, the holiday where we demonstrate a true dependence on God and conviction in the Torah system, where it's not going after the physical, but looking at really our souls and depending on God. So we minimize our living quarters. And we wave a produce around to show how this is really God's controlling what's above and what's below, meaning heavens and earth. But not only what's above and what's below. So we wave it up and down. But we also wave it on the other axis. North, south, east, and west, we have to wave it too to show that it's not just that God created the heavens and earth. Not only is he creator of all, and all is expressed by what's above and what's below. That's it. That encompasses the entire universe. But that's only in terms of expressing that God is the creator. But what about the fact that God is governor? That he also has providence over men? Not only that he created things, but that he governs things? So then, north, south, east, and west, that indicates the travelings of man. Meaning north, south, those are directions on the surface of the earth. It has nothing to do with the heavens anymore. Now we're just talking about the directions. Why? Because that's where man travels, man's doings. That's something which God is involved with as well. So we demonstrate that conviction too. But those are two main themes. We have that on the high holidays too, that the prayers are broken up into the fact that God's all-powerful, that's creator, and all-knowing, that he can govern man. Omnipotent and omniscient. And you have those in the temple as well. You have those themes. So they're very primary. So we see clear why Koheles is selected to be to be read on the holiday where we're finally embodying the right philosophy. So then let's read the book that discusses it by one of the wisest men ever. Now remember that King Solomon was given miraculous knowledge when he was 12 years old, when King David died. At 70, he became the king at that point, and he asked, but God had to come to him in a vision. God came to him and said to him, ask what I should give to you. So then King Solomon, with his wisdom already, being raised by King David up to this point, he asked not for the death of his enemies, not for wealth, but he asked for wisdom to judge the people. And so God gave it to him. But God had to first open that possibility up, because until God says that, a person will not assume that nature is going to change, that I'll be able to gain knowledge by any other means than by diligent study. But now God said no. The David had to die at this age. You happen to be very young, and I'm going to assist you. But he presented it also in a way where he engaged King Solomon's thinking. He didn't just come to King Solomon and say, I'm giving you wisdom. He engaged his thought, as all, you know, prophecies are. They're to raise the person. God says to Moses on Mount Sinai, we're going to read it a week or two, by the golden calf. God says to Moses, leave me and I'll destroy the people because they sinned. So Moses understood from that if I don't leave God, he may not destroy the people. I mean, if I stay here and I pray and I elevate myself to a point where I can become more knowledgeable and then impart that to the people, and then I can raise the people to a level where they don't need extermination. So that's what God was intimating to Moses when he said, leave me and I'll destroy them. So you have to weigh all of God's words. So it's hard to sum up a book after we've been doing this for so long, you know. But it would be nice, as I'm thinking out loud, like what would be the next thing to do, is maybe, you know, the rabbis say a person who plants and he doesn't harvest, so that's the same thing about a person who learns and he doesn't review. So I think that it's, you know, for something also, which is, this is the primary, you know, the primary message that we're supposed to be getting, and it's how we're supposed to live, how we're supposed to really put our philosophy into action, and what values, and it's a lot, but what I think we should do is maybe, you know, take a look, leaf back through, look at our notes, and think about the classes, and, you know, what maybe we have still questions on, you know, try to really walk away with this in our pocket, so it stays with us. And maybe the way to do it, you know, to look through, you know, pick out, you know, the stuff from the beginning, but maybe pick out what resonates, what maybe were certain ideas that you'd like to go over. So if you want to do it during this week, there's a, and again, I think they're all, let me just see here how we have them on the site. I think they're by date on the audio section if you need to listen to something. So they're all archived there. The question is, let's just see, how we have it listed. So I think some have titles, some by date, some may have by the verses that we did. So if you look it up that way. So maybe let's do that. Let's just, so, you know, we have some review. We have, you know, I'll try to do it as well to see if we could, you know, just encapsulate some core principles. Like, you know, Maimonides did. He gave 13 principles that are really the core fundamentals of Torah. So maybe we can try to come up with what are the core messages, you know, Kahelis, in terms of not only content, but what remember how we repeated over the style of how he tried to reach people, since the goal was to reach people. So he kept on saying things that sounded like he was saying it himself. And that sounds like heretical. He sounds like he's rejecting something in the Torah, but we said numerous times that that's not the case. He was merely articulating the positions that people had, consciously or unconsciously, as a mechanism to get a person to say, oh yeah, I do agree with that. And how come that's so? So once he gets people to agree by vocalizing something as if it's his own, then he shows how it's a false view. So there were certain styles that he used, certain modes of education. And there are patterns, and certain core ideas, like in terms of death, was a theme. A lot of times he talks about that. Or wealth. What were the different angles on the wealth that he had? So I would suggest we should look through it and see what really, resonates with each one of you, what questions there might be. And let's use the next week or two as review over questions, things that we have discussed. Doesn't mean that all of us are satisfied with, the many things that, if we think about it, we'll go back, we had a question, didn't ask it, or we got an answer, but it doesn't really sit well. Can we take that? So how about we do that over the next week or two or three, whatever it takes? Sounds like a good thing to do?
Yeah, for me it is.
Okay. Will everybody be around for the next 2 weeks? Because that'll probably be important. That I want to make sure that we do this with everybody present. Is everybody going to be around?
Yes, I'll be.
We won't be the week next 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks from now, you won't. All right, so let's start next week with it, and then maybe we'll take off because I'd like you guys to be there, and then we'll resume the week after that. So, mm-hmm. But for definitely next week that we'll start. And we'll start to do review. All right?
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. All right, so wish you all a good week. Look it over. And maybe a good idea, too, as you're looking through it during the week, if you don't mind, you type it down and send it to the list. Noah Hyde. I think everybody should be on the list. Noah Hyde's at Masora. And we'll keep track of it that way and even converse. And this way, if I see during the week, that's probably better for me. If I see matters or topics that you're looking at, I could have more of a jump start to look it over myself, so I'm better prepared next week. All right, so everybody have a great week, and we'll pick up next week, next Sunday.
You too. Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.